This is Audible.
Audible Frontiers presents The Human Division, written by John Scalzi, narrated by William DeFries. Episode 6, The Back Channel.
"General, let us return to the matter of humans," Unli Hado said. From her seat on the podium behind General Tarsem Gao, leader of the conclave, Hafdey Sorval sighed as quietly as possible. When the conclave was formalized and the Grand Assembly was created, with representatives from every member of the conclave crafting the laws and traditions of the newly emerging political entity, comprised of more than 400 separate races, General Gao promised that every sir, every 40 standard days, he and those who followed him as executive would stand in the well of the assembly and answer questions from the representatives. It was his way of assuring the conclave members that the leadership could always be held accountable. Hafdey Sorval told him at the time that as his trusted advisor, she thought it would be a way for the grasping, ambitious members of the assembly to grandstand and otherwise, in all senses, be a waste of his time. General Gao had thanked her for her candor in this, as in all other things, and then went ahead and did it anyway. Sorval had come to believe this was why, at these question-and-answer sessions, he always had her sit behind him. That way he would not have to see the I-told-you-so expression on her face. She had one of those now, listening to the tiresome Hado from Elpri pester Gao yet again about the humans.
"Return to the matter, Representative Hado," Gao said lightly. "It seems, from these sessions, that you never leave the matter alone."
This received various sounds of amusement from the seated representatives, but Sorval marked faces and expressions in the crowd that held no levity in them. Hado was a pest and held a minority view, but it was not to say the minority he was part of was entirely insignificant. Standing at his bench assignment, Hado moved his face into what Sorval knew was a configuration expressing displeasure.
"You jest, General," he said.
"I do not jest, Representative Hado," Gao said, equally lightly. "I am merely well aware of your concern for this particular race."
"If you are well aware of it, then perhaps you can tell the Assembly, what plans you have to contain them," Hado said.
"Which them?" Gao said. "You are aware, Representative, that the human race is currently divided into two camps, the Colonial Union and the Earth. The Earth is not a threat to us in any way. It has no ships and no way into space other than what the Colonial Union, from which it is now estranged, allows it. The Colonial Union relied on Earth for soldiers and colonists. Now that supply has been cut off. The Colonial Union knows that what soldiers and colonists it now loses, it cannot replace. This makes it cautious and conservative in its expenditures of both. Indeed, it has been said to me that the Colonial Union is now actually attempting diplomacy on a regular basis."
This received more sounds of amusement.
"If the humans are actually attempting to get along with other races, my dear representative, it is an indication of just how cautious they are at this point."
"You believe, General, that because they play at diplomacy, they are no longer a threat," Hado said.
"Not at all," Gao said. "I believe that because they cannot threaten as they have, they now attempt diplomacy."
"This distinction between the two escapes me, General," Hado said.
"I am well aware of that fact, Representative Hado," Gao said. "Nevertheless, the distinction exists. Moreover, the main portion of the Colonial Union's attention at the moment is in a rapprochement with Earth. Since you ask what I plan to do to contain the humans, I will note to you what you should already know, which is that since the Conclave trade fleet carrying Major John Perry appeared over Earth, we have maintained an active diplomatic presence on Earth. We have envoys in 5 of their major national capitals, and we have made the governments and people of Earth aware that should they choose not to reconcile with the Colonial Union, there is always the option of the Earth joining the Conclave."
This caused a stir among the assembly, and not without reason. The Colonial Union had destroyed the Conclave war fleet over Roanoke Colony, a fleet comprised of a ship from each member race of the Union. There was not a member race in the Conclave that had not suffered a wound from the humans, or who was not aware how perilously close the Conclave came to collapse in the immediate aftermath of that particular fiasco. Representative Hado seemed especially incensed.
"You would allow into the Conclave the same race who tried to destroy it," he said.
Gao did not answer that question directly. Instead, he turned and addressed another representative.
"Representative Plora," he said, "would you please stand?"
Representative Plora, an Auspa, shambled up on its spindly legs.
"If memory serves, Representative Hado, in the not-too-distant past, the Elpri and the Auspa shed a significant amount of their blood and treasure trying to eradicate each other from space and history," Gao said.
"How many millions of each of your citizens died because of the hatred between your races? And yet, both of you are here in this august assembly, peaceable as your worlds are now peaceable."
"We attacked each other, not the Conclave," Hado said.
"I believe the principle still applies," Gao said, with a tone that suggested that he had a hard time believing Hado attempted to make that argument. "And in any event, it was the Colonial Union which attacked the Conclave, not the Earth. To blame the Earth, or the humans who live on it, for the actions of the Colonial Union is to misapprehend how the Earth itself has been used by it. And to your point, Representative, the longer we may, through diplomacy, keep Earth from allying itself with the Colonial Union, or joining the Colonial Union outright, the longer we keep the humans from doing any sort of mischief at our door. Is that not what you are asking for?"
Sorval watched Hado fidget. It wasn't at all what he was asking for, of course. What he wanted was the Conclave to expunge the human race from every crevice it clung to. But it looked for the moment as if Gao had walked him into a corner, which, Sorval supposed, was one of the reasons he had these ridiculous question-and-answer sessions in the first place. He was very good at walking his opponents into corners.
"What about the disappearing ships?"
came another voice, and everyone, including Sorval, turned toward Representative Plora, who had remained standing after it had been called on. Plora, suddenly aware that it was the focus of attention, shrank back but did not sit.
"There have been reports of more than a dozen ships that have disappeared from systems where Conclave territory borders human territory. Is that not the work of the humans?"
"And if it is, why have we not responded to it?"
Hado said, now out of his corner. General Gao glanced back to Sorval at this point. She resisted giving him her "I told you so" expression.
"Yes, we have lost several ships in the last few, sir," General Gao said. "They have largely been merchant ships. These are systems where piracy is not entirely unknown, however. Before we leap to the assumption that humans are behind this, we should explore the more likely explanation that raiders, ostensibly citizens of the Conclave, are the more likely cause."
"How can we know for sure?" Hado said. "Have you made it a priority to know, General, or are you willing to underestimate the humans for a second time?"
This quieted the assembly. Gao had taken responsibility for the debacle at Roanoke and had never pretended other than that he was responsible. But only a fool would press him on the subject, and it appeared that Unli Hado was that fool.
"It is always a priority for our government to find those of our citizens who are lost to us," Gao said. "We will find them, and we will find whoever is behind their disappearance, whoever they are. What we will not do, Representative Hado, is use the disappearances of these ships to launch into a fight with a people who have shown how committed they are to trying to destroy us when they feel they are cornered and have no choice left but to fight. You ask me whether I am willing to underestimate the humans. I assure you that I am not. What I am wondering, Representative, is why you seem so determined to do so.
Sorval visited General Gao later in his personal office, which was cramped, even if one was not a Leylan, who were a tall species, and Hafde Sorval, who was tall for her species.
It's all right, Gao said from his desk as she ducked through the door. You can say it.
Say what? Sorval asked.
Every time you crouch through the door of this office, you come in, you straighten up, and you look around, Gao said. Every time you get an expression on your face that looks like you have bitten into something slightly unpleasant. So, go ahead and say it. My office is cramped.
I would say it is cozy, Sorval said. Gao laughed in his fashion.
Of course you would, he said.
It's been commented on by others how small this office is, considering your position, Sorval said.
I have the large public office for meetings and to impress people when I have to, of course, Gao said. I'm not blind to the power of impressive spaces, but I've spent most of my life on starships, even after I began to build the Conclave. You get used to not a lot of space. I'm more comfortable here. And no one can say that I give more to myself than the representatives of any of our member races, and that, too, has its advantages.
I see your point, Sorval said.
Good,
Gao said, and then motioned to the chair that he clearly had brought in for her because it matched her physiology.
Please, sit.
Sorval sat and waited. Gao attempted to wait her out, but waiting out a Leylan is a bad bet on a good day.
All right, say the other thing you're thinking, Gao said.
Unni Hado, Sorval said.
One of the graspingly ambitious types that you warned me about, Gao said.
He's not going to go away, Sorval said. Nor is he entirely without allies.
Very few, Gao said.
But growing, Sorval said. You have me with you for these sessions to count heads. I count heads. There are more of them each session who are either in his orbit or drifting toward him. You won't have to worry about him this time, or the next, or possibly for several sessions down the line, but if this goes on, in time you will have a faction on your hands, and that faction will be agitating for the eradication of the humans, all of them.
One of the reasons we formed the Conclave was to rid ourselves of the idea that an entire people could or should be eradicated, Gao said.
I am aware of that, Sorval said. It was one of the reasons why my people gave you and the Conclave their allegiance. I am also aware that ideals are hard to practice, especially when they are new. And I am also aware that there's not a species in the Conclave who doesn't find the humans, well, vexing is likely the most polite word for it.
They are that, Gao said.
Do you really believe that they would be that hard to kill? Sorval asked. Gao presented an interesting face to Sorval at this.
An unusual and surprising question coming from you of all people, he said.
I don't wish them dead, personally, Sorval said. At least, not actively. Nor would the Leylan government support a policy of extinction, but you suggested to Hado they would be a formidable opponent. I am curious if you believe it.
Are the humans able to stand against us, ship to ship, soldier to soldier? No, of course not, Gao said. Even our defeat at Roanoke, with over 400 ships destroyed, was not a material blow to our strength. It was one ship out of dozens or hundreds that each of our members had in their own fleets.
So you don't believe it, Sorval said.
That's not what I said, Gao said.
I said they can't stand against us, ship to ship. But if the humans go to war with us, it won't be ship to ship. How many human ships went against us at Roanoke? None. And yet we were defeated, and the blow was immense. The Conclave almost fell, Hafde, not because our material strength had been compromised, but because our psychological strength had. Those ships were not what the humans were aiming for. Our unity was.
The humans almost shattered us.
And you believe they could do it again? Sorval said.
If we press them? Why wouldn't they? Gao said. Throwing the conclave nations back into war with each other is an optimum result for the humans. It would keep all of us occupied while they rebuild their strength and position. The real question is not whether the humans, the colonial union, could attack and possibly destroy the conclave if pressed. The real question is why they haven't tried to do it since Roanoke.
As you say, they have been busy trying to bring the Earth back into the fold, Sorval said.
Let us hope it takes them a long time, Gao said.
Or perhaps they have started making war on the conclave, Sorval suggested.
You're talking about the missing ships, Gao said.
I am, Sorval said. As tiresome as Representative Hado may be, the disappearance of so many ships near human space is not to be dismissed out of hand.
I don't dismiss it, Gao said. The representative major for the fleet has our investigators scouring the scenes in the nearby populated worlds for information. We have nothing so far.
Ships rarely disappear so comprehensively, Sorval said. If there's no trace, that in itself says something.
What it doesn't say is who is responsible, however, Gao said,
and then raised a hand as Sorval moved to comment.
It's not to say we don't have our intelligence net within the Colonial Union working overtime, trying to find connections between the humans and the disappearances. We do. However, if we find it, we will deal with it discreetly and without the sort of open warfare that Hado and his friends in the Assembly so want us to have.
Your desire for subtlety will frustrate them, Sorval said.
I am fine with them being frustrated, Gao said. It's a small price to pay for keeping the conclave intact. However, it is not the discussion of the disappearing ships that is the reason I asked you here, Hafday.
I am at your service, General, Sorval said. Gao picked up a manuscript sheet on his desk and handed it to her. She gave him a curious look as she took it. A hard copy, she said. Her assignments from him were usually offered on her computer.
It's not a copy, Gao said.
That sheet you have is the only place in the entire conclave where that information is recorded.
What is it? She asked.
It's a list of new human colonies, Gao said.
Sorval looked at Gao, genuinely shocked.
The conclave had forbidden any unaffiliated races from colonizing new planets. If they tried, the new colonies would be displaced or destroyed if the colonists would not leave.
They can't truly be that stupid, she said.
They are not, Gao said. Or at least officially, the Colonial Union is not.
He pointed at the sheet.
These are what the humans call wildcat colonies. It means that they are not sanctioned or supported by the Colonial Union. Most of these sorts of colonies are dead in a year.
So nothing we could call out the Colonial Union for, Sorval said.
No, Gao said, except for this. We have rumors that the Bula found humans attempting a wildcat colony on one of their worlds, and that at least a few of the colonists were Colonial Defense Forces members. The Colonial Union attempted to extract the colony and were discovered doing so by the Bula. It had to part with a substantial ransom to retrieve its citizens and buy the Bula's silence.
These wildcat colonies aren't actually unofficial at all, then, Sorval said. And we're back to the question of whether they are truly that stupid.
It's a fine question, but one that is tangential to my real concern, Gao said.
Sorval waggled the sheet in her hand. You're worried that Hado and his friends will find out about these.
Precisely, Gao said, and pointed at the sheet again. That's the only written-out list, and it's written out only once to avoid it slipping out easily into the universe. But I am not stupid, nor do I believe my intelligence gatherers talk only to me. Hado and his compatriots will find out. And if they find out, and if these colonies really do have Colonial Defense Forces members within them, then we have no choice but to remove the colony. If the colony won't be moved, we'll have to destroy it.
And if we destroy it, will be at war with the Colonial Union, Sorval said.
Or something close enough to it, Gao said. The humans know they are in a bad position these days, Hafday. They are dangerous animals on the best of days. Poking at them right now is going to go poorly for everyone involved. I want this problem solved privately before it becomes a public problem.
Sorval smiled. I imagine this is where I come in.
I've opened up a back channel to the Colonial Union, Gao said.
And how did you do that? Sorval asked.
Me to our envoy in Washington, D.C., Gao said. Him to John Perry. John Perry to a friend of his in the CDF Special Forces, and so on up the chain of command and back down again.
Sorval gave a motion of assent. And my job is to meet with the back channel.
Yes,
Gao said.
In this case, it will be someone of lower rank than you. Apologies for that. The humans are twitchy.
Sorval offered up a hand expression, signaling acceptance and lack of concern.
It's a Colonel Abel Rigney. He's not of especially high rank, but he is very well placed to get things done.
You want me to show him this list and let him know we know about the CDF soldiers, Sorval said.
What I want you to do is scare him, Gao said, in your own special way.
Why, General, Sorval said, and gave the appearance once more of being shocked. I have no idea what you mean. General Gao smiled at this. Well, he was certainly a tall fellow, wasn't he? Sorval said, looking up at the statue in the Lincoln Memorial.
Tall for a human, yes, Colonel Rigney said, and especially tall for his time. Abraham Lincoln was president of the United States well before humans made it out into the universe. Not everyone had good nutrition then. People tended to be shorter, so he would have stood out. Among your people, Counselor Sorval, he'd be considered something of a runt.
Ah, Sorval said. Well, we are generally considered tall for most intelligent races we know of, but surely there might be some humans as tall as a Leylon.
We have basketball players, Rigney said. They are very tall for humans. The tallest of them might be as tall as the shortest of you.
Interesting, Sorval said, and kept looking at Lincoln.
Is there some place you would like to go to talk, Counselor? Rigney asked, after allowing Sorval her moment of contemplation.
Sorval turned to the human and smiled at him. I do apologize, Colonel. I realize you are indulging me by meeting me here at a tourist attraction.
Not at all, Rigney said. In fact, I'm glad you did. Before I left Earth, I lived in this area. You're giving me an excuse to visit old haunts.
How wonderful, Sorval said. Have you seen any of your family and friends while you're here?
Rigney shook his head. My wife passed on before I left Earth, and we never had children, he said. My friends would all be in their 80s or 90s now, which is old for humans, so they're mostly dead, and I don't think the ones that are living would be too pleased to see me bounding in, looking like I was 23 years old.
I can see how that might be a problem, Sorval said. Rigney pointed at Lincoln.
He looks the same as when I left.
I would hope so, Sorval said. Colonel, would you mind walking as we talk? I walked down the mall before I got here, and I passed someone selling something called churros. I should like to experiment with human cuisine, I think.
Oh, churros, Rigney said. Good choice. By all means, Counselor.
They walked down the stairs of the Lincoln Monument and toward the mall. Sorval walking slowly so as to keep Rigney from having to jog to keep up. Sorval noticed other humans looking curiously at her. Aliens on Earth were still a rarity, but not so rare now in Washington, D.C. that the people there would not attempt nonchalance. They stared equally at the green human next to her, she noted. Thank you for meeting me, Sorval said to Rigney.
I was delighted to, Rigney said. You gave me an excuse to visit Earth again. That's a rare thing for a CDF member.
It's convenient how the Earth has become a neutral ground to both of our governments, Sorval said. Rigney winced at this.
Yes, well.
he said.
Officially, I am not allowed to be pleased by that particular development.
I understand entirely, Sorval said. Now then, Colonel, to business. She reached into the folds of her gown and produced the manuscript and handed it to Rigney. He took it and looked at it curiously.
I'm afraid I can't read this, he said after a moment.
Come now, Colonel, Sorval said. I know perfectly well that you have one of those computers in your head, just like every other Colonial Defense Forces member. What is the ridiculous name you call them?
A brain pal, Rigney said.
Yes, that, Sorval said. So I am confident that not only have you already recorded the entire content of that paper into the computer, it has also rendered you a translation.
All right, Rigney said.
We aren't going to get anywhere, Colonel, if you are going to insist on fighting me on even the simplest of things, Sorval said. We would not have opened up this back channel if it were not absolutely necessary. Please do me the courtesy of presuming I am not on my first mission of diplomacy.
My apologies, Counselor, Rigney said, and handed back the document. I am in the habit of not revealing everything. Let's just say my automatic reflexes kicked in.
Very well, Sorval said, took the manuscript and then placed it back into the folds of her gown. Now that you've undoubtedly had time to scan the translation, you can tell me what was written on the document.
It was a list of uninhabited planets, Rigney said.
I question that modifier, Colonel, Sorval said.
Officially speaking, I have no idea what you are talking about, Rigney said. Unofficially, I would be very interested in knowing how you developed that list.
I am afraid I must keep that a secret, Sorval said. Not in the least because I was never told. But I assume now we can dispense with the polite fiction that there are not, in fact, 10 colonies where there should not be.
Those aren't sanctioned colonies, Rigney said. They're wildcats. We can't stop people from paying spaceship captains to take them to a planet and drop them there without our permission.
You could, I am certain, Sorval said, but that's not the issue at the moment.
Does the Conclave blame the Colonial Union for the existence of these wildcat colonies? Rigney asked.
We question that they are wildcat colonies at all, Colonel, Sorval said, as wildcat colonies typically do not have Colonial Defense Forces soldiers in their mix of colonists.
Rigney had nothing to say to this. Sorval waited a few moments to see if this would change and then continued.
Colonel Rigney, surely you understand that if we had wanted to vaporize these colonies, we would have done it by now, she said.
Actually, I don't understand, Rigney said. Just as I don't understand what the gist of this conversation is.
The gist, as you say, is that I have a personal message and a bargain for the Colonial Union from General Gao, Sorval said. That is to say, it comes from General Gao in the capacity of his own person, and not General Gao, leader of the Conclave, a federation of 400 races whose combined might could crush you like a troublesome pest.
Colonel Rigney's face showed a flicker of annoyance at this assessment of the Colonial Union, but he quickly let it go. I'm ready to hear the message, he said.
The message is simply that he knows that your wildcat colonies are no such thing, and that under different circumstances you would have received notice of this knowledge by having the fleet show up at their doorstep, followed by other reprisals designed to strongly dissuade you from further colonization attempts, Sorval said.
With respect, Counselor, Rigney said, the last time your fleet showed up at our doorstep, it didn't end well for your fleet.
Colonel, the last time a fleet of ours showed up at your doorstep, you lost the Earth, Sorval said. Beyond that, I think you and I both know that you will not get a chance to repeat your exploits at Roanoke a second time.
So the General wishes to remind us that normally he'd vaporize these colonies, Rigney said.
He wishes to remind you of it, to make the point that at this time he has no interest in doing that, Sorval said.
And why not? Rigney asked.
Because, Sorval said.
Really? Rigney said, stopping his walk. Because is the reason?
The reason is not important, Sorval said. Suffice to say, the General doesn't want to have a fight over these colonies at the moment, and it's a good guess that you don't either. But there are those in the Conclave who would be delighted to have a fight over them. That's something neither you nor the General wants, although almost certainly for different reasons. And while right now the only two people in the Conclave political caste who know of the existence of that list are the General and me, I have no doubt that you know enough about politics to know that secrets don't stay secret long. We have very little time before the content of that list makes its way into the hands of those in the Conclave who would be thrilled to take a torch to your colonies and to the Colonial Union. Sorval started walking again.
After a moment, Rigney followed. You say we have very little time, he said. Define very little.
You have until the next time General Gao is required to take questions from the Grand Assembly, Sorval said. By that time, the warmongers of the Assembly will almost certainly know the existence of at least some of the colonies, and that CDF soldiers are at them. They will demand the Conclave take action, and the General will have no choice but to do so. That will happen in 30 of our standard days. That would be about 36 days on your Colonial Union calendar.
So much for the message, Rigney said. What's the bargain?
Also simple, Sorval said. Make the colonies disappear, and the Colonial won't attack.
This is easier said than done, Rigney said.
This is not our concern, Sorval said.
Supposing that there were Colonial Defense Forces soldiers at these colonies, Rigney said, wouldn't simply removing them be sufficient?
Sorval looked at Rigney as if he were a slow child.
Rigney understood enough of the look to put up his hands. Sorry, he said. Didn't think it through enough before it came out of my mouth.
These colonies aren't supposed to exist, Sorval said. We might have been willing to overlook them if they had genuinely been wildcat colonies, at least until they got too large to ignore. But these are known to have CDF soldiers in them. They will never not be targets for the Conclave. They have to be gone before we have to officially take notice of them. You know what the consequences are otherwise for both of our governments.
Rigney was silent again for a moment. No bullshit, Counselor?
Sorval didn't know the word bullshit, but guessed at the context. No bullshit, Colonel, she said.
9 out of 10 of those colonies won't be difficult to evacuate, Rigney said. Their colonists are standard-issue, disgruntled Colonial Union citizens who have vague ideas about freedom from the tyranny of their fellow man or what have you, or simply don't like other people enough to want to have the company of more than about 200 other of their own kind. 6 of these colonies are near starvation anyway and would probably be happy to escape. I would in their shoes.
But then there is this other colony, Sorval said.
Yes, then there is this other colony, Rigney said. Do your people have racists? People who believe they are inherently superior to all other types of intelligent people?
We have some, Sorval said. They're generally agreed to be idiots.
Right, Rigney said. Well, this other colony is comprised almost totally of racists, not only against other intelligent races, I shudder to think what they would think of you, but also of other humans who don't share their same phenotype.
They sound lovely, Sorval said.
They're assholes, Rigney said. However, they are also well-armed, well-organized, well-funded assholes, and this particular colony is thriving. They left because they didn't like being part of a mongrel Colonial Union, and they hate us enough that they would probably get off on the idea that by going down in flames, they would consign us to hell as well. Extracting them would be messy.
Is this actually a problem for the CDF? Sorval asked. I don't wish to be unpleasantly blunt about this, but the CDF is not known for being an institution that cares deeply about those whom they crush.
We're not, Rigney said. And when it comes down to it, we'd get them out because the alternative would be grim. But in addition to being well-armed, well-organized, and well-funded, they're also well-connected. Their leader is the son of someone high up in the CU government. They're estranged. She's mortified that her son turned out to be a racist shithead, but he's still her son.
Understood, Sorval said.
As I said, messy, Rigney said.
they had arrived at the churro stand. The churro vendor looked up at Sorval, amazed. Rigney ordered for them, and the two of them continued walking after they had received their pastries. "These are lovely," Sorval exclaimed after the first bite. "Glad you think so," Rigney said. "Colonel Rigney, you're worried that the only way to get these racist, intractable asshole colonists is through bloodshed," Sorval said, after she took another bite.
"Yes," Rigney said. "We'll do it to avoid a war, but we'd like a different option."
"Well," Sorval said, around churro, "inasmuch as I am asking you to do this, it would be wrong of me not to offer a possible solution to you."
"I'm listening," Rigney said.
"Understand that what I am going to suggest will be one of those things that never happened," Sorval said.
"Since this conversation isn't happening either, this is fine," Rigney said.
"I will also have to ask you to do one other thing for me first," Sorval said.
"And what is that?" Rigney said.
"Buy me another churro," Sorval said.
"Take another step, Zig, and I'll blow your head off,"
said the colonist directly in front of Sorval. He was pointing a shotgun at her chest. Sorval stopped walking and stood calmly at the frontier of the colony of Deliverance. She had been walking toward it for several minutes, having had her shuttle land at the far reach of a broad meadow on which the colony had situated itself. Her gown swished as she moved, and the necklace she wore featured audio and visual devices feeding back to her ship. She had walked slowly in order to give the colony enough time to muster a welcoming party, and for another purpose as well. Five heavily armed men stood in front of her now, weapons raised. Two more that she could see lay on colony roofs, zeroed into her position with long-range rifles. Sorval assumed there were more she couldn't see, but they didn't concern her at the moment. She would be aware of them soon enough.
"Good morning, gentlemen," she said.
She gestured to the markings on their skin.
"Those are lovely, very angular."
"Shut up, Zig," said the colonist. "Shut up and turn around and get back in the shuttle of yours and fly off like a good bug."
"My name is Hafde Sorval," she said pleasantly. "It's not Zig."
"Zig is what you are," said the colonist. "And I don't give a shit what you call yourself. You're leaving."
"Well," Sorval said, impressed. "Aren't you fierce?"
"Fuck you, Zig," the colonist said.
"A bit repetitive, however," Sorval said.
The colonist raised the shotgun so that it was now pointing at her head.
"You'll be going now," he said.
"I won't, actually," Sorval said. "And if you or any other member of your merry band tries to shoot me, you'll be dead before you can manage to pull the trigger. You see, my friend, while I was walking toward your compound, my starship, orbiting above this location, was busy tracking and marking the heat signatures of every living thing in your colony larger than 10 of your kilos. You're now all entered into the ship's weapons database, and about a dozen particle weapons are actively tracking 20 or 30 targets each. If any one of you tries to kill me, you will die horribly, and then everyone else in the colony will follow you as each individual beam cycles through its target list. Every one of you and your livestock and your large pets will be dead in roughly one of your seconds. I will be a mess, because much of what is inside of your head right now will likely get onto me, but I will be alive, and I have a fresh change of gowns in my shuttle."
The colonist and his friends stared at Sorval blankly.
"Well, let's get on with it," Sorval said. "Either try to kill me, or let me do what I came here to do. It's a lovely morning, and I would hate to waste it."
"What do you want?"
said another colonist.
"I want to talk to your leader," Sorval said. "I believe his name is Yako Smirt."
"He won't talk to you," said the first colonist.
"Why ever not?" Sorval asked.
"Because you're a Zig,"
he said, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world.
"That's really unfortunate," Sorval said, "because, you see, if I am not talking to Mr. Smirt in 10 of your minutes, then those particle beams I mentioned to you will cycle through their targets and you'll all be dead again. But I suppose if Mr. Smirt would rather you all be dead, it's all the same to me. You might want to spend those moments with your families, gentlemen."
I don't believe you, said a third colonist.
Fair enough, Sorval said, and pointed to a small enclosure. What do you call those animals?
Those are goats, said the third colonist.
And they are adorable, said Sorval. How many can you spare?
We can't spare any, said the second colonist.
Sorval sighed in exasperation. How do you expect me to give you a demonstration if you can't spare a single goat? She said.
One,
said the first colonist. You can spare one, Sorval said.
Yes,
the first colonist said, and one of the animals exploded before he had even finished saying the word. The rest of the goats, alarmed and covered in gore, bolted toward the furthest reaches of the enclosure. 4 minutes, 22 seconds later, Yakko Smeert stood in front of Sorval. It's lovely to meet you, she said to him. I see you go in for angular markings as well.
What do you want, Zig? Smeert said.
Again with the Zig, Sorval said. I don't know what it means, but I can tell you don't mean it nicely.
What do you want?
Smeert said, through gritted teeth. It's not what I want, it's what you want, Sorval said. And what you want is to leave this planet.
What did you just say? Smeert asked.
I believe I was perfectly clear, Sorval said. But allow me to give you additional context. I am a representative of the Conclave. As you may know, we have forbidden further colonization by humans or others. You are, at least to a certain approximation, human. You're not supposed to be here. So I've arranged for you and your entire colony to go. Today.
The fuck we will, Smeert said. I don't answer to the Colonial Union, I don't answer to the Conclave, and I sure as shit don't answer to you, Zig.
Of course you don't, Sorval said. But allow me to attempt to reason with you anyway. If you leave, then you will live. If you don't leave, then you'll be killed, and there will be a state of war between the Conclave and the Colonial Union, which is likely to end very poorly for the Colonial Union. Oh, surely that matters to you.
I can think of no better way to die than as a martyr for my race and my way of life, Smeert said. And if the Colonial Union dies with us, then I will welcome its diluted population as our honor guard into hell.
A stirring sentiment, Sorval said. I was told you were a believer in racial purity and such things.
There is only one race, and it is the human race, Smeert said. It must be preserved and made pure. But it is better for all of humanity to fall than to remain the denatured thing it is today.
Marvelous, Sorval said. I must read your literature.
No Zig will ever read our sacred books, Smeert said.
It's almost touching how devoted you are to this racial ideal you have, Sorval said.
I'll die for it, Smeert said.
Yes, and so will everyone like you, Sorval said. Because here is the thing. If you don't leave this colony today, you will die, which you're fine with, I understand. But after you're dead, I'll make a study of everyone in this pure colony of yours to make sure I understand your essence. Then the Conclave will go to the Colonial Union and make them an ultimatum. Either every member of your pure race of human dies, or every human dies. And, well, you know how mongrels think, Mr. Smeert. They have no appreciation for the perfection of purity.
You can't do that, Smeert said.
Of course we can, Sorval said. The Conclave outnumbers the Colonial Union in every single possible way. The question is whether we will or not. And whether we will depends on you, Mr. Smeert. Leave now, or leave the human race to the mongrels forever. I'll give you 10 minutes to think it over.
That's a disgusting tactic you used, Gao said as Sorval recounted her encounter with the Deliverance colonists.
Well, of course it was, Sorval said. When you are dealing with disgusting people, you have to speak their language.
And it worked, Gao said.
Yes, it did, Sorval said. That ridiculous man was happy to let all of the human race die, but when it was just his tiny, phenotypical slice of it, he lost his nerve. And he was convinced that we would have done it, too.
You assured the other humans we wouldn't, I presume, Gao said.
Colonel Rigney, whom I was dealing with, did not need the assurance, Sorval said. He understood what I was planning from the start, and as soon as I got that wretched man to agree to leave, he and his team had them in shuttles and off the planet. It was all done by local sundown.
Then you did well, Gao said.
I did as you asked, Sorval said, although I do feel bad about the goat.
I'd like for you to keep this back channel with Rigney open, Gao said. If you work well with him, maybe we can keep out of each other's way.
Your consideration of the humans is going to become a sticking point, General, Sorval said. And although this one meeting went well, I think that sooner or later our two civilizations are going to be back at each other. No back channel is going to change that. The humans are too ambitious, and so are you.
Then let's work at making it later than sooner, Gao said.
In that case, you'll want this, Sorval said, and took the manuscript page from her robes and gave it to General Gao. Let the information on it, all of it, find its way to Representative Hado. Let him bring it to you in the Grand Assembly, and when he does, announce that you have seen the list too, and that our forces have been to each of the planets and found no record of human habitation, as they will not, because the Colonial Union was thorough in removing traces. You may then accuse Hado of warmongering and possibly fabricating the document. You will break him there, or at least damage him for long enough that he will cease to be a factor. Gao took the document.
This is what I mean when I say you are scary in your own special way, Hafde, he said.
Why, General, Sorval said, I don't know what you're talking about.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of The Human Division, Episode 6, The Back Channel, written by John Scalzi, narrated by William Dufries. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2012, by John Scalzi. Production copyright, 2012, by Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.